Right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Carlos Gonzalez, and this is our fifth session of our mindfulness course that started in January of 2022. We have one more class after this one. The theme of today's class is nurturing community. And so we'll be talking about more than community, I believe. We'll be talking more about belonging and how we can create an environment of belonging within ourselves and amongst ourselves. So with that, I wanted to, first of all, invite you to relax and to do whatever you need to do to feel comfortable, to be at ease, to feel at home, and to realize that this hour that we are together is a safe time. It's a time that there's no need to defend anything, to sort of be on guard. We could relax. And so I extend that to everyone, and I hope you feel it deep in your heart and in your bones. I wanted to start today's class with a bit of a calling forth of the ancestors, since we are going to be talking about community. I figured that we could start with naming some people in our lives. And this is a ceremony I learned some years ago from a civil rights teacher, actually one of the speech writers for Dr. King, Vincent Harding, who taught a class at FIU for a couple of, like for a week. And I was lucky to sit in with him. And he taught us this. And one of the things that he did at the beginning of that class was to ask us to say our mother's mother's name, meaning our grandmother's name, our maternal grandmother's name. So I invite you to think of and remember the name of your mother's mother's name. And I invite you to also think of the place where you were born. So we're gonna say the location of where we were born and and our mother's mother's name. So I'll start. Hi, everybody. My name is Carlos. I was born in Cienfuegos, Cuba. And my mother's mother's name is Ines, or was Ines. Anybody could jump in.
Hi, everybody. My name is Elisa, and I was born in Havana, but my family is not from there. It's from the other side of the island, Santiago. And my mother's mother's name was Rosario.
Deborah, I was born in Seattle, and my mother's mother's name was Frances.
Alexia, I was born in Miami, and my mother's mother's name is Minerva.
Hello, my name is Camila. I was born in Medellin, Colombia. My mother's mother name was Lilia. I didn't really like her, so I don't really remember what her mother's name was. Sorry, pretty bad.
I'm gonna read Berta. I think Berta does not have a mic that works, and so she wrote in the chat, my name's Berta. I was born in El Salvador. My mother's mother's name was Berta.
I'm Maggie. I was born in Cienfuegos, like you. And my mother's mother's name was Ines.
Hugo, I was born in Cienfuegos, Cuba. And I don't remember my mother's mother's name.
Can you name a female relative other than your mom?
Mirna.
Say it again.
Mirna Camacho.
Mirna Camacho. Got it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Susan. I was born outside of Chicago in Hinsdale, Illinois. My mother's mother was named Barbara, and she preferred to go by Bertha. And she was born in 1894, so that tells me a lot. She was complicated and I didn't know her very well, but I always thought of her as Barbara instead of Bertha. Don't know why, because she preferred it or didn't prefer it.
Okay, I think we got everybody in the little, in our little escuelita today. And we've named the grandmothers and the mothers and a bit of the ancestors and a bit of the location where we were born.
I thought we were talking about our great grandmothers.
No, it would be the grandmothers. Do you want to say another name?
No, I said her name too. I said her name is Lilia. I thought you were talking about her grandma. I mean, her mom.
We could go back. I don't know if I know my great grandmother's name. Okay. But yeah, so we'll stick with the grandmothers. Cool. Let's take a 3-minute sit. Back to our meditation practice. So I invite you to take a seat that's comfortable. Find your sit bones. Place your feet on the ground so that you feel ground below you. And I'm going to do that. Take your knees wider than your hips, your knees below your hips if possible. Take an upright back, but not a stiff back, right? So straighten up your back as comfortably as it feels good for you, but not stiff. Hands on your laps, your chin slightly down, your eyes, your gaze towards the ground with the eyes open slightly. And notice your breath. So noticing the breath means that you become aware of the sensation of breathing in the body. You may notice the belly going out on the inhale, the belly going in on the exhale. You may notice the coolness of the air sort of touching the tip of your nose, the warmth of the air going out of your nose. You may notice the sensation of the air going through your throat and the breath going through your throat. So that would be noticing the breath. That's the physicality of noticing the breath. You may notice the breath in other movements within the body, including within your pelvic floor, your shoulders, all sorts of places where if you explore, you may notice the breath sort of doing some change as you inhale and exhale. So we'll notice the breath very lightly, sort of gently, and in no time, in a very little bit of time, you'll notice that your awareness will shift to your thoughts. And it's not wrong for that to happen. It just happens. And you may be there for a little bit. You may be there for a very short period of time. When you notice that you are in thought, just label that thinking and then with gentleness, return back to the breath. Just a return. And then again, do that a bunch of times, as many times as you need to in 3 minutes. So here we go. I have my trusty egg timer to make sure that we don't do 3 hours, and we'll do 3 minutes. Here we start. Well, the egg timer has rung and we continue our practice. I want to shift a little bit and share my screen momentarily and show you an emotion wheel. And this is found in the week 5 page for the course. And it's a wheel that some of you have seen if you've been in my yoga class at some point. I use this in my classes to help students for them to identify how they're feeling, to find language. It's limited in that it's, you know, it's a limited list. You'll notice that the wheel is divided into sections. I often tell students pick 2 or 3 words and realize that the words don't all have to match in the area of the wheel so that you could be happy, and at the same time you could be feeling something that doesn't quite match that because the emotions are not linear. And so I'm going to show the wheel and let me know if you could see it okay. Did we actually check? Did we do the wheel last week? We did do the wheel last week. Let's do it again. So we'll do the wheel again. I didn't realize that we had done the wheel last week again. I forgot. So let me share the wheel. And this time it is in week 5. So let me get that. Here's the wheel. And here we go. Let me make this a little bit, so maybe, not sure if this is getting too big. You have a choice, maybe not a full wheel. pick a word or two to show where you are in the wheel, more or less. And I'll start. I'm saying that I'm feeling right now a little bit tired and feeling thankful, tired and thankful. Who wants to jump in?
I also feel extremely tired, and I feel loving and peaceful.
I feel so many things all at the same time. And it's not that one cancels out the other. There aren't any direct contradictions. I can be happy and angry. I can be surprised and disgusted. I think since this course has started, frankly, my emotion has been all over the map. I don't know if it's as a result of our meditations in the class, or if it's just a happy byproduct that helps us to be more aware of those feelings. Mm. Contradictory state of being.
Mm. Okay. Very cool.
I am thankful. And I am frustrated. Mm. And that's just strange because one is positive and one is not so positive, but I'm feeling both of them at the same time. And I think that it's good.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Cool. I'm feeling excited, trusting, and a little anxious. Also contradicting.
I'm feeling trusting, hopeful, and at the same time, vulnerable.
Taking in hour, so I feel very tired.
Yeah. Straight up tired.
I'm feeling tired and loving and annoyed.
Mm. Okay. Very cool. I think we got everybody. And Berta, I'm not sure if you're seeing the screen or not, but I know that you are on text. So maybe you're seeing the screen, maybe not. But Berta chimes in, I'm feeling tired and excited. Okay, very cool. So once again, to come back to the three things that we've just done, we did the naming of the grandmothers, we did our little 3-minute sit, and now we come back to the emotion wheel. And all of these sort of these little practices that we just did, we could say in a way they have a common theme, and the theme is that they are decentering practices. Especially when we look at, for instance, when we look into the emotion wheel and we're able to identify the emotion, but realize that we're not the emotion. And that's where the language is always interesting. I am feeling, or I am. Right. So when I am tired, then you actually are identifying in your language, not necessarily, but with the language directly with the emotion. But when we say that I am feeling tired, or I'm feeling angry, or I'm feeling whatever it is that you're feeling, you're just identifying that the emotions are running right through you and they will not stay put, and that you're not that emotion. That's a decentering mode or a decentering practice. The same thing with the grandmothers in a way, and also naming of the town that we were born. I don't know how it felt to say that place, that location and the name, but something gets triggered when I hear like those names for me, when I hear other people say their names and I'm like, who are those people? What are those places? What was it like? And right away, I'm out of my center of me, of being a sort of just paying attention to myself. And suddenly I'm in a larger space, a more spacious space, right? I wanted to talk a little bit about that, the notion of decentering, and why it's such a powerful gift of mindfulness meditation practice. Decentering is, if we think of some of the ways that we process information or we process the world in terms of our mind, we have what we call conceptual processing. Conceptual processing is what we normally do when we are thinking about things. When we're in our meditation practice and our attention drifts to our thinking, the thinking that we're labeling thinking is conceptual processing. It is the thinking that labels things, that categorizes things, that tells stories about things, that judges things, that says good or bad, or I like, I don't like. That's all part of conceptual processing. And it's an important part of our life. If we didn't have conceptual processing, we wouldn't be here. So it's not like that's wrong and we're going to do something else. No, it's just like we're just identifying that that is part of what we do. But the issue is that for most people, they stay there. So they stay in their conceptual processing throughout the whole day and for years and maybe for a whole lifetime, just about, where when you talk to somebody and you realize, oh, that person's in their head, you know, that person's just living out of their mind. That person is really enmeshed in that conceptual processing. The other form of processing, sort of the world around us, is experiential processing. And that form of processing brings us into a non-biased approach to like whatever's happening in front of us. where whatever's happening in front of us, we don't judge as good or bad. We just notice it, which is ultimately what we're describing as a meditative state of experience, In experiential processing, the self is not centered. Our biases are not preferred. Whereas in conceptual processing, our biases, the things, our preferences are front and center. When we're doing experiential processing, those preferences are not there necessarily. So experiential processing is a decentering mode, which depersonalizes experiences. It doesn't remove you from them. You experience them, but in a depersonalized way. Now, this is really important because it comes into play in terms of reactivity and things like our emotions. When we experience our emotions from a conceptual processing mode, we will react and say, I don't want to be sad. I don't want to be angry because that's wrong. Or I don't want to be pissed at that person. Or all the things which we tend to do, which means that we put it under the rug of our sort of aware, or not of our speech, or we repress. It's what Susan and I talked a little bit about, was the positive, toxic positivity, right? So this notion of the conceptual processing is important in terms of our reactivity to the world around us, also to our relationships, right? So when we are in relationships with other people, if we are in that conceptual processing mode, and not in an experiential processing mode, we can't have intimacy. Intimacy does not take place in the mind. It does not take place in that conceptual mode. It could only take place in the moment, because the moment is vulnerable. The moment is something that we can't hold, that we can't manipulate, that just happens. And when we experience the moment as the moment without a story, and we do that with another person, that's a moment where we could actually have that connection. And this is where community is so important. We're in a crisis of community, in a sense, in part because the conditions for it starts with this foundation, where we're being pulled in a way into distraction mode, which is classic to that conceptual processing mode of judgment, and rarely or very with difficulty, we're able to just settle in and just sit down and be. And that is a barrier to relating to another human being. And it would be a barrier to relating to ourselves, right? That the basis of community is our relationship to ourselves. If we cannot be intimate with ourselves because maybe we are afraid of what's there, because maybe we've been taught to judge what's there and what's proper, what's not proper, then we can't possibly settle in with somebody else and also be with them in that intimacy and in that freedom. This is an aspect of freedom that that is very personal, right? But in a way decentered, right? So going into that freedom is calling for a personal decentered approach where you include the body, but you don't center the self. You don't center that sense of the I. So even like, for instance, if we were to work with our emotions from that perspective and from even a meditation perspective, and let's say that you're feeling angry, where we would do an inquiry, where is it that you're feeling the anger? Where is it in the body? Are you feeling it in your chest? Is it in your throat? Do you feel a certain tightness? Is there a certain weight to the anger in the body? Is there a certain texture? Is it rough? Is it smooth? Is it sharp? Does it have a color? Does it have a taste? Does it smell like something? So we begin to embody the emotion and locate it like we located the place where we were born, and like we located our mother's mother, who is our ancestor, right? That location, that physicality of that location is very particular, but it's also very decentered from the idea of me or self. And so when we do the meditation practice and we are able to have our awareness on the breath, and then allow, and then the awareness drifts to our conceptual processing thinking, right? And we become aware of that, and then we return. That return is the muscle, right, of decentering. And it's the mindfulness muscle, we could say, in the brain that allows us to have the full awareness of the thoughts and the present moment at the same time without exclusion, which is interesting because that's partly what we're reporting with emotions, that if we allow ourselves to be, we'll find that we're multiplicity of emotions running through, and that we'll find little strands of this and little strands of that. And it's constantly in this current of flow that is an energy going through us, right? And we could sink into that and just notice it. And we could be scared, we could be whatever, but we could also turn to wonder and say, and then how does this show up in the world that I'm in relationship to other people? So that's a little bit of what I wanted to say about meditation today in terms of the thinking involved, sort of that thinking is absolutely necessary. It's not wrong. And that we could, and we have multiple modes that we could use, right? And that the conceptual processing mode is important, but we can notice how much we rely on that and how often, how limiting the conceptual mode is in terms of restricting us from really freely enjoying and being in the moment, because it takes us to the future or it draws us back into the past. And it leaves us kind of like, you know, in those two polarities, but not in the present. I don't know if anybody wants to jump in, and maybe, you know, anything that I've said also in relationship to the readings from last week, which were that chapter on the actual like sitting practice, which was interesting in terms of the instruction on the breath. And how that noticing the breath is very subtle. It's not a grip. It's a gentle touch, of the breath. We're not gripping anything as much as we like to.
I just want to say something. Carlos, it's crazy that you like are talking about this topic today about community and even calling like our ancestors, because yesterday I had this dream that I was like walking through a forest and I was holding a little girl and I was calling out different names from people that have passed away in my family. And they were all female, and it felt so like, I can't even like describe it, but I saw them like pass by after we were calling them, me and this girl. And I'm not sure if I like was that little girl or if it was like another generation after me. But yeah, it's just, it feels so, in tune, you know? Like, thank you.
What a beautiful dream, right? What a beautiful dream to experience. And then to notice like the quality of that dream and the quality of this dream that we're in, right? That then you start going like, which one is the dream, you know, that it's like this, when we go into the experiential processing mode, we're not gripping, so things are not so solid, and they take much more of a dreamlike quality to them, more fluid, that's an interesting place, right? I would just say it's an interesting place where creativity can really emerge. Things can be dislodged that have been kind of like fixed. It could be a very scary place because of all of that, because things can be dislodged and creativity can take place. And you might be surprising yourself and other people around you that are expecting you to be a certain way, and then you're not. Freedom really has that element, you know, that it could be, surprising to people. But how amazing that we can experience that, and that anybody can experience that, no matter like where they are in terms of their life, and that it could be experienced by a young person like yourself, it could be experienced by an older person like myself. That age really makes no difference. And I think this is one of the gifts of having a practice like this, because it really allows you to remain present, which is, again, age then sort of dissipates. The solidifying that happens in people's minds as they get older dissolves as you keep coming back to the moment, right? That's the anti-aging practice of returning to the moment, and those patterns that have kind of like ossified are becoming much more like softer and maybe more malleable. Very powerful. So does anybody have any observations from this past week in terms of what you've learned from your experiences, right? So we have experiences, and from those experiences, we go like, oh, I'm learning this. This is what I'm learning right now. And this goes back to the journal, right?
I'm in this process of a big, huge, huge flipping life lesson. And what's interesting is that my personal narrative, it's in such direct conflict, direct opposite, couldn't be any more opposite than my personal narrative of how I describe myself. I'm trying really hard in this class and in the last month, and since we've begun the process, to remove the I and the me all the time. And it's nearly impossible to do. it was surprising to me, a big culmination of an experience. And it was just on a walk, a meditative walk. Okay, let's just walk. And I have a hard time sitting in my silence, in my process. I like to be moving. I like to tell myself what my feelings are. I like to tell everyone around me who I am. And in the walk, I found that I completely stepped out of my own narrative and I turned into this, it's not very flattering, this horrible Tasmanian devil to the person that I love the most dearly on the face of the earth. We've been together 37, 38 years. And I just flipped my shit on the middle of the Rickenbacker Causeway. And again, in such direct contrast to who I tell myself I am, who I tell other people I am, that it was shocking and scary, but yet cathartic. And the result of that, I think it's grief. The result of that Tasmanian devil just, it's kind of great, huge Kali energy. And it's interesting because she's been there before and I saw her coming again, but it's different this time. Before it was fear-based, this time, and this was 10 years ago, this time it's curiosity-based. And it's really flipping amazing to see how it's gonna play out, truthfully. Mm-hmm. It's no longer fear in the course of like 48 hours. It's just a hypnotic fascination now. Mm-hmm. It's been a really cool process. And Carlos, you opened that up. You kind of confirmed with this class, you know, it's okay to sit there and feel those feelings. And in this entire class, I was awfully quiet last week. I kept telling myself, well, this is the feeling I'm feeling. And that's the feeling I'm feeling, that toxic positivity we've been talking about. But this time I allowed, that barking dog to come in, like in the book.
Yes.
You know, Dogs of Nepal. So they started howling and I howl right along with them now.
Yeah.
Scaring everybody else, but they're coming back around. They get it. They're with me. So it led to some really pretty cool conversation, I guess. So thanks.
Wow. Very powerful. Wow. Amazing. And, you know, in all of this, we want to be kind to ourselves. We want to take care of ourselves. So we want to, you know, when we need help, we ask for help. When we need to eat, we eat. When we need to rest, we rest. And there are times when we are in deep turmoil, right? And the waves come. And we keep coming back to to that sense of experience and knowing that if we're grounded, you know, in that sense of presence, that whatever happens, we could observe and we could work with. We can work with whatever it is that shows up and create space for it. And the idea is, can we open the space so that it becomes larger for that Tasmanian devil to have a good ecosystem to be really a great Tasmanian devil and happy Tasmanian devil? Or do we enclose that Tasmanian devil where it feels trapped? And, you know, I think the spaciousness is the way to go. How do we make more and more space for ourselves and then for the others around us, right? And part of it is that when we show up as ourselves, then we're giving ourselves permission to do that, but we're also giving other people permission to do the same thing, which is, this is how my freedom is tied to your freedom. And as long as you're not free, I'm not free either, because we keep sort of tying each other up by the things that bind. And then how do we, and the pulling of a knot, you know, like when you do have a knot, you don't pull really hard. You kind of like, do little tugs here and there until the knot kind of like undoes itself. if you pull too tightly, it just gets worse. And when we're working with ourselves in challenging transitional moments, I think that's an attitude of just, you know, taking it easy, taking it slow, and having confidence. Like, have the confidence, hey, all this is all going to work out one way or another. It may not be the way that I like it for it to work out, but it will work out. You know, this is for the decentered approach, where it's not, you know, like, it's not your preference that is the most important thing. It's like, well, like, let me see what happens here. And it's that curiosity.
Right. We spend our lifetimes repressing whatever emotions comes in the door. And we say to that emotion, no, 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 it's not your time. Just you wait outside. No, not right now. You know, our busy is our badge of honor. So it's interesting to let those emotions play out. Because in polite society, in a workplace, or, you know, you're forced to just put on that happy, smiley pumpkin face and toxic positivity while not letting anything else speak.
Wow, powerful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else wants to, a lesson that you learned, something that you picked up from the book, a win that you had this week?
I tend to be a reactive person. So I really kind of like say what's on, especially with the people that I love. And I think doing the meditation and like reading this book, I'm trying to be a little bit more aware and less like take a little bit of time making a choice. And because like she says in the book, you could go to war or you could try to make peace. So trying to be more peaceful in the way I speak with others and be less reactive. So that's what I got this week.
And that's the fruit of the practice. So it's like that the practice leads you to that on its own by that mechanism that we talk about of remembering, of becoming aware of being aware, which is meta awareness. It's the larger awareness of the entire thing. And when you become aware of your own reactivity and you go, I'm about to like respond to this, but do I really want to say that? You know, maybe I do, but like, is it really what, you know, like, do I want that?
Because usually what happens is later on, I regret it, you know, or I could say, you know, it didn't really resolve any issues or whatever. It didn't get me anywhere. So, you know, it just seems to be a little bit easier.
Yeah.
In life. But I understand what you're saying also, Susan, that, you know, that sometimes you just want to be a Tasmanian devil and just let it out, you know? It's true.
Well, this week I started it was the first week of the meditation class in the women's prison. And I had one student in particular at the end. I asked like, oh, what are you taking with you from this class today? And there was a younger woman. She said, you know, I don't know if she's been in prison for a number of years. And she goes, it's been a number of years since I've come to meditation. But this class today reminded me of when I was younger. And I would do yoga and meditation by the river in my town. I didn't catch the town that she was in, with my sisters and my friends. And I remember doing that and how good it felt. And today I remembered that. And I realized how far I am from that and how I regret having gone so far from it. And she had this sense of regret, right? And I pointed out to her that what she was doing was actually like a giant meditation of being aware of the body, of the present, drifting into thought, which could be for years, remembering and then returning. And that this practice is about return. It's not about getting it right. It's not about doing it right. It's not about matching a certain pattern. It's about remembering and returning to the moment. And that when we do that return, that's the fullness of the practice. That is the fullness of the practice. So I keep coming back to what she was saying. And I wonder how she will continue to process her experience in that class. But it definitely reminded me of myself as someone who forgets, and that there have been times in my own life where for long periods of time I have forgotten and left myself, sort of abandoned myself in my thoughts and in my mind and in my stories, and how oftentimes for so many years, what it would take for me to return to awareness. And that we go through cycles in our life, right? As we go through different periods and phases, and how precious it is to be able to be right now, be at this moment where we're practicing this together, and that we are attempting this thing of this practice of the return and of the awareness, because there are times when we don't have that. And right now we do. Right now we do, so we take advantage of the possibility. Yeah. Well, I wanted to share this week's page. And let me go back to where we were before. So this week you get the the instructions plus the emotion wheel. So it's like, look at all this. This is a really nice tool, again, that you can use to decenter when you're feeling, when you're feeling that you're deep into that conceptual processing mode and you want to come back to the body. These are little tools that we use. And so you could do an emotion wheel check-in in your journal. You could do it in the morning. You could do it at noontime, and you could do it at night. Check in with yourself and notice how the emotions change. It's really an interesting process of documenting the changes in the emotions. And then, you know, see if you could use the language of I am feeling instead of I am this. And as you do, just keep coming back to that notion of just experiencing the emotion. Where is it in the body? Where is it in the body? I included a short video by Dr. Davidson, who is probably like the leading voice in positive psychology, which is a branch of psychology that emerges like around 1992, which is steeped, deeply steeped in mindfulness meditation practice, and really the use of fMRI machines to scan the brain and what happens. This is in part why this field takes off. And this presentation is a short one, but a powerful one that is a nice companion for what we've been talking about. I sort of outlined the little lecture. He talks about loneliness and how 76% of middle-aged Americans report high levels of loneliness. And he points out that loneliness is not an ephemeral state, meaning it's not just something that you experience in your mind, but it's something that impacts our bodies. And it's a predictor of early mortality, more so than obesity. So even more than being overweight, feeling lonely is more of an issue for physical health than other factors. So this idea of community, which really starts with befriending ourselves, is incredibly important and powerful and connected to the practice itself. As you scroll down, there's more of that lecture, and then you get to this week's Escuelita, and you have a little bit of some writing on meditation and community. And part of what I'm inviting you to think about as you meditate this week is to sense the experience of that meditation as a nurturing feminine presence. Could be a mother, could be a grandmother, could be a great grandmother. Pick any feminine presence that would feel like a nurturing presence. And imagine that 20-minute sit that you do as that nurturing female presence, holding and nurturing you as you sit, right? So that we can use the imagination to settle ourselves and then have the experience of the meditation itself. So there are many forms of meditation. We're focusing on mindfulness meditation, but there are all sorts of visualizations that are very powerful as well, which we're not getting into. We don't need to, but this kind of touches on that a little bit, and it deepens the practice of the meditation. And then you have the highlights from chapter 5 that I picked. You probably have your own, and with some comments and some observations. There's a little bit on conceptual processing and experiential processing, which is what we talked about a little bit today. And you know, these concepts, which is part of conceptual processing, are important, right? This is how we feed our mind and also use our mind to open up and to use it in a way that is useful and that would serve us in our process of freedom, right? Here's we're trying to get rid of those dogs. Yeah, that's what we try to do all the time. But you know, as Susan is figuring out, we're feeding the Tasmanian devils. So that's what this week is all about. We will meditate together on Friday in the morning at 7. I want to encourage you to practice as often as you can, as long as you can. And if you're not doing the 20 minutes, do whatever you can, right? So 3 minutes is better than no minutes. 3 days is better than 0 days. And you know, don't beat yourself up. This is not a beating up process, a practice. This is a returning practice. And sometimes it takes years to return, right? And no time lost, no time lost. We just return. We have plenty of time. This is the beautiful thing. We have plenty of time. We've been at this for a very long time, and we don't have to be afraid that we've missed the boat, because that fear of missing the boat often doesn't let us experience the boat that we're already on. Nobody's missed it. We're all on it, on our merry way. With that, I will end the session tonight, unless maybe we have somebody that hasn't said something that wants to say something. Maybe somebody's in the room that would like to share before we go. Got it. So with that, I wish everybody a good night. I hope that you have a really good rest of the week, that you take care of yourself. And we'll see each other maybe this Friday for those of you who are able to make it. And if not, next week, which will be our last session for this little course, but not the last time that we're going to see each other. So take good care, everybody. Good night.
Thank you, Carlos.
Bye-bye. You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Carlos. Take care. Good night. Keep dreaming.